Hello and welcome to this edition of TechAU. It's episode 48. My name is Jason Cartwright. Thanks very much for joining me once again. And today we're going to be talking a lot about this little item in my hot hand here, the iPad. That's right. I am freshly back from the United States of America. 3 weeks holiday over there, which was fantastic time. One of the best things in my life I've done. Very happy I did it. And we'll talk a bit about that trip as well. A lot of new experiences for myself. But I want to start off this episode with the iPad. Obviously, it's not yet launched in Australia, so some of you may or may not have had hands-on with a device. Maybe a friend of yours has come back from the US as well and grabbed you one if you're into it. Or maybe you've just got hands-on and tried somebody else's. So let me run you through my decision as to why I bought one. And that was basically I love my technology, I love my gadgets. And I was 90% of the way there just from seeing the announcement. And just it was a really slick device. And I wanted to confirm that before I bought one. So I walked into an Apple store. It was actually the first day we got to LA. Bit of a screw up with the flight. So I was meant to arrive in LA on launch day and I had pre-ordered an iPad. However, a couple of days later, after a flight via Hong Kong, we ended up in LA about 2 days after the iPad launched. I was worried there wasn't going to be, any stock of the iPad if it was hugely successful. It was successful, but there was still some in stock. So I walked into a store, got hands on. There's obviously tables with different products of Apple's at the Apple store. So the front two tables, both left and right store. Left and right hand side of the store were full of iPads, and it was hard to get on one. There was just people everywhere, and I got hands on with it. And about 5 minutes later, I said to the girl, "Look, I want one of these." And so I just went and bought it, grabbed a case for it as well, and we'll get to that in a second. But it's just the Apple case, and so it cost $4.99 US, and of course they don't do sales tax. Until you get to the register. So that $4.99 US becomes about $5.50-ish, $5.40, $5.50-ish with the sales tax. And then the case was around $50. So about $600, the best part of $600 US later, I walked out of the store with a new 16 gig Wi-Fi version of the iPad. And what was really good was the fact that I was traveling, and it was a great opportunity to test out the device and how it works if you're on a bus, if you're on a plane, that sort of thing. Because during my trip, we went to a number of cities. I'll just run you through the list. We started in LA, San Diego, Phoenix, Sedona, Grand Canyon, Vegas, Bass Lake, and ended up in San Francisco. So there was a lot of traveling between those cities, and I thought this is going to be a great device for that time to fill in the hours between cities. And it was. It really proved a great device for that, especially once you start to add in a few third-party apps, so games and that sort of stuff that can work offline. Buses of the future, well, there's some starting to get around now that have Wi-Fi on them. Ours didn't. It was a new bus, but it didn't have Wi-Fi. That'll be great in the future when vehicles in general start to have Wi-Fi. And so without Wi-Fi, you're basically left with third-party applications. The apps that it comes with, I mean, the device itself is pretty bare when you first turn it on, and you will need to connect it to iTunes. Doesn't take long at all. You just plug it in. iTunes looks at the device and says, yeah, okay, it's okay to activate. So it did take me a couple of days initially to find somebody with a machine, with a computer on the trip, plugged it into their iTunes, and it activated straight away. So that's just one thing to remember when you get the device. The Australian launch was obviously meant to be out here by now. It's meant to be late April. Now it's moved, they delayed it for a month, so late May. So I've had the device for about a month now. It's been about a week since I got back. So how do I like it? Well, I love it. I do. Do I think everybody needs one? No, absolutely not. Especially if you already have a laptop or a netbook that's serving you well and you're happy with that, there's really not a lot of compelling reasons to rush out and get it. If you have some spare cash and you love gadgets, absolutely. It's a fantastic device. I will say browsing the web and manipulating web pages, zooming in and out and clicking on links and making actions happen based on what you do, is a really immersive experience. So I can be sitting on the couch with a big TV in front of me with a screen, you know, movie or TV show or whatever, and it could be, you know, one of my favorite shows I've found. I'll be maybe using the iPad during the ads, the show will come back on, and 5 minutes into the show, I'll still be using my iPad and not realize, you know, and just because, I don't know, you end up staring into the screen and sort of forgetting about everything else around you. And that's sort of a compliment to the device. It's quite engaging, if you like. But, I've got all my mail accounts hooked into here. Facebook app doesn't yet exist for the iPad, and I'm really surprised that there's some high-profile applications that are really missing from the device at the moment. So we have some IM applications. I'd end up laying down, about $9.99 US for the IM Plus app, so I can do instant messaging, and that covers apps, services like Live Messenger, so Microsoft, Skype, and what's the other one? Oh, and Facebook Chat. So and a bunch of others, all in the one app. So IM Plus is really good for IM. And let me just fire that up. I'll do sort of probably application reviews over the next week or two. When you fire up the app, you basically get a prompt to say which accounts do you want to activate. You just switch the status to on, and then it loads up all your contacts, who's online, who's not, and it works really well. You can actually stay logged into this app and Live Messenger on your computer, which is good because some of the iPhone apps that handle messaging don't support that. This one does, so it's really good. But one of the awesome things about this is it's got a web browser built in. So maybe one of your contacts sends you a link or you're discussing something, you want to research it. You can just do that right from within the app. That's really cool. Obviously, it supports push notifications, all that sort of stuff. Anyway, I'm getting sidetracked. So there's a bunch of games. I downloaded Plants vs. Zombies. It's like $13, pretty expensive. But everybody's raving over it, so I thought I'd better jump in on that. There's a TwitPad app, so it's called TwitPad. There's another one called TwitTouch, so just look at the descriptions and make your choice based on that. I chose TwitPad just because it was out first, and so that allows me to watch twit.tv. It's got the live stream, it's got the chat, all sorts of goodness. So that's on my home screen. I've got Twitter apps like TweetDeck and Twitterific. Actually, Twitterific has sort of become my go-to app for the iPad. That's the free version of it. NewsRack is by far the best RSS Google reader that I've come across. Oh, here's a really cool app that that I started playing around with last night. It's called Mobile Mouse. And so what you do is run the app on your iPad, and then you run a server client. It's prety low resources, just sits in your sys tray and does its thing, lets the device talk to it. And so basically what you end up with is a giant touchscreen that right now is controlling the mouse on my screen. I've got multiple monitors, it supports that. And then if you need to type like in an IM app or something like that, just bring up your on-screen keyboard and you can type away, hide that away, and then you got your mouse pad. You got left and right mouse buttons down the bottom, and then this row of icons down the bottom is your apps. So you can just press on one of them to launch the app. You've got music controls. If you're playing music, you can just hit a music button at the top, and you get your play controls, that sort of thing. So Mobile Mouse, it was a few dollars. It's actually, you know, basically you could replace your keyboard and mouse with it if you're really enthusiastic, but it's just kind of a cool use case for it that's sort of just an interesting something that you... There were apps on the iPhone that did a similar sort of thing, but were a little more difficult to use with much more screen real estate. That's where it really becomes interesting. More apps. Okay, so I hope this isn't boring. You're running through all the apps, but when you get your iPad, hopefully you can look at these. Epicurious is a fantastic cooking app. hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of recipes. Also includes drinks, like alcoholic drinks, and you can pull it out at a party and you know, just have the iPad in your kitchen and just go for it. That's fantastic. I bought Pages just because, I don't know, I wanted to try it out. It's good, it works. Am I going to use it heaps? Probably not. If I'm somewhere, that is an app you can use offline, obviously, so that's one thing. You could be writing something while you're offline. I've got the WordPress app, so I can blog from the iPad. GoWalla, in terms of location-based apps, GoWalla is the first to get theirs out. They beat Foursquare. There was a post on the site during the week if you're paying attention to the blog, and you should be. And that's at techau.tv if you didn't know. And it works really well. And for a device without a GPS in, it uses the Wi-Fi to triangulate where you are, and it's actually incredibly precise. So that's props to GoWalla for getting those out first. Expect an app from Foursquare pretty soon. There's apps like eBay, IMDb, Break, if anybody knows the site break.com. StumbleUpon. What else have we got? XKCD, so the cartoon of the day. TapTap Radiation's an interesting one. It's like TapTap Revenge, except for just it makes much more use of the screen real estate. It's got some good songs, and you just basically you have a circle come in and then three hotspots on the screen, and when the circles that come in hit are inside those hotspots, you tap on them, and it's basically reacts or plays part of the track when you're, you know, when you get it right, basically. So it feels like you're playing, in a sense, playing some music. So that's a good app. There are a lot of keyboard sort of apps, so one like Jampad. So you can actually play like a piano or a keyboard on your iPad. Photo Bucket, I've got to give props to this app. If you want some new backgrounds for your iPad, check out Photo Bucket. They've got a ton of different like images, which you can use as wallpapers, and amount of categories too. So whatever floats your boat, you can just sort through those. There's a Kindle app. There's also iBooks, because I bought this from the US, and I actually have a US iTunes account now. So the deal with that is, this is something to remember if you've got one now or getting one before the Australian launch, is if you want to buy apps directly from the device, you're going to need a US iTunes account, because Apple hasn't flicked the switch to basically enable Australian accounts on it yet. So until the launch happens in late May, then you're going to have a US account. The way to get around that is you can download apps in the in iTunes using your Australian account, and then just sync across those apps to your iPad. But I have found in a couple of scenarios, I've searched for an app in the Australian store and it's not there. So there's no iPad apps section in iTunes if you go to the store. What you have to do is just search for iPad in iTunes, and it will come up with a bunch of apps, and then just sort them. So it's not certainly not as nice of an experience as being able to go into the App Store and then filtering on base, you know, they've got like featured, top charts, categories, that sort of thing. So it's a much nicer experience on the iPad itself. What else? Maps is really cool. Very responsive, and they fade in the tiles rather than snap them in, so it just feels a lot faster. I'm going to wrap up these app recommendations very shortly. There's things like comics and stuff work really well on the iPad. There's a Marvel app, and you can just... So basically it uses like in-app purchases to download more. You can get a few for free, and then you pay for more. There's an app called PrestoFrame, and it allows you to plug in a feed from Flickr. I wish Flickr actually had its own app, and maybe that's on its way. But for right now, there's some apps, and PrestoFrame is one of them. You just grab your RSS feed from Flickr and put it in there, and then it becomes like a photo slideshow of your photos. So that works pretty well. Other than that, I mean, iPod, photos, mail, all that sort of stuff works essentially the same. It's got a little bit different UI than the iPhone, but essentially it works the same. And contacts is kind of a new take on presenting contacts. It's not bad. I just plugged in my Google account and then synced across all my contacts, calendars, that sort of stuff. That works really, really well. The one downside of the device is the screen resolution. 1024 by 768 means that when you're playing videos, a lot of them will have the black bars at the top and bottom. Now, on a 16 by 9 video, that's not too bad, but I'm not sure how well this will come out, but basically, that is a movie, and I'll just move to a scene with a bit more white in it. This is a movie called Shooter, and there's quite a bit of the screen that's taken up with the black bars at the top and bottom. Now, they allow you to basically fill the screen with a video, but that's no good because you end up losing, the rest of the video gets cut off on the side, so it's not a good solution. Another sort of downside about the device is that Apple tried to promote the fact that this will run all the iPhone apps. Well, technically that's true, but you're not going to want to run any of the iPhone apps. The pixel doubling technology that they have basically looks ridiculous, looks like hell. So, and that's just caused because it's caused by having graphics that are designed for something that big, and then trying to make it work on something that big. I mean, it's multiple, many multiples of the size. So if you stretch any image, any JPEG image that big, it's going to look pretty average. So as much as you can download iPhone apps to the device, you're really going to be wanting to hunt for iPad apps rather than iPhone ones. So last thing probably I need to talk about the iPad is the case. And I'm incredibly, incredibly happy that I got this case, because what it does is not only sort of protects the device, and if you're walking down the street, I guess it sort of looks a bit more bookish than an iPad. The Apple logo is a dead giveaway, so what I do when I'm walking is I'll sort of turn that into my body, and so carry it you can imagine down further, just have the Apple logo turned into your body so people can really see it. I found that, I felt pretty nervous walking through an airport and stuff like that especially in Australia, that, not because the Australian airport's dodgy or anything, but just because it's not out here yet, and it's a pretty high-profile device. When I had it out in public and I was using it in the US, I had multiple people come up to me and say, "Is that an iPad?" And then it was actually kind of cool that people come up and they start talking to you about the iPad, and then you run through, you end up becoming almost like a salesman, which is not at all what I intended, but you just sort of run them through the features, and then every single person that's seen it was like, "Wow, I want one," sort of thing. So maybe that's just symptomatic of the fact that Apple have run a massive advertising campaign in the US. They've done a really, really good job, especially around San Francisco. The back of chairs in the street, signage in the street, massive billboards, just iPad was just plastered everywhere. And we went to an Apple store one morning to buy an iTunes gift card, and the store opened at 10 o'clock, and there was a queue of maybe probably 25 people at the door. And look, maybe that's normal at an Apple store in San Francisco, I'm not sure, but basically by the time the doors opened, the store was packed within 5 minutes. It was like middle of the day packed, and that's just amazing. So, and obviously they've got a number of Apple stores over in the US, so I don't know, their advertising seems to be really working. There were, when I walked in, a lot of devices. Any day that I walked into an Apple store, probably went to 3 or 4 when I was over there. And just behind the counter, they had just a pile of iPads. So it's strange that they delayed the launch here as much as they did. It seems they're really servicing the US market. I think it is a good device. I found myself using my laptop a lot less. Like, I used to use my laptop both in front of the couch and when you go to bed, if you want to watch a movie or something before you go to bed. I'm now using the iPad for that purpose. Yeah, so it's replaced some of the uses of the laptop, but then again, there's some more advanced stuff that I want to be doing on my laptop that I still need that. Definitely still need my PC. So it's sort of fitting in the middle in some use cases, and as more applications come out, those use cases increase. And yeah, certainly great for traveling. What else? For reading books and that sort of stuff, I have a couple of friends that that love reading, and the thought of reading them on having just carrying around a bunch of books on the device is very inviting to them. I've discussed it at length, and I actually want to maybe leave the device with them a couple of days and let them use it and see what they reckon. But in terms of, you know, I'd heard a lot of speculation that, you know, this device isn't going to be, you know, any good for reading books because it's got the LCD backlit screen. It's going to be hurting your eyes, etc., etc. But look, honestly, I stare at a screen all day long, and you know, maybe if I've been up for 18 hours or something, or 20 hours, my eyes start, you know, might start to hurt at that point. But that's more just about being tired than the actual screen, I think. So battery life on this thing is awesome, especially in standby. The first time I charged it, I didn't charge it for another week. So I was using it, you know, on and off, and it lasted a week, which is, you know, fantastic. And even just with hardcore use, I mean, you're getting 9-ish hours sort of thing out of the device, which is, right now, my laptop's probably doing 1.5 to 2 hours. So I know there's some better laptops that are doing 5-ish hours. But really, for a device like this, it's phenomenal, the battery life you get out of it. And that's sort of, you know, real world like use, not like the, I mean, they say technically 10 hours, but I don't think I've ever heard a battery estimate be as close as to what the device actually offers in real life. So that's good. The 3G model will be down on that a bit, just because the 3G uses a bit more power. That's fine. I really don't see the need for the 3G model for myself personally. I mean, it would be great to be connected all the time, but not for the extra expense. You know, I don't need another monthly bill. And yeah, quite happy with the Wi-Fi version. I've got Wi-Fi at home, Wi-Fi at work. There's Wi-Fi down the street. So yeah, on a whole, I think the Wi-Fi, I can get away with it. The case, I didn't really talk about it properly before. The main point I want to make was the angle. So basically, you've got a couple of different ways to use it. Is you can sit it on a bench flat like that, and it will stand up. So, you know, if you want to use it as a picture frame, something like that. You know, you can just use it as a picture frame and do a slideshow thing. Or the other option, if you are viewing something in portrait mode, I don't know, you wouldn't really typically use photos in portrait mode, but anyway, you can use it in portrait mode as well, like just because the triangle-ish there makes enough of a stand that it will stand up properly on that way. The best and most common use case scenario for the stand is to use it like this. And so you actually get the 30-degree incline. And what that allows you to do is to type on it a lot more effectively than you normally would if it was sort of on a flat. Basically, without the case, the back of it's actually curved a bit, so it will rock a bit while you're typing, which is kind of annoying. The added benefit to having the 30-degree incline is if you don't have the screen lock on, so that rotation lock, just sitting on a bench or desk or whatever, because of the angle of it, the orientation of the screen will automatically rotate to the correct way. So that, I find, works really, really well. I'm glad I got the case. This case in particular, there's a bunch of cases, so definitely don't just get the Apple case by default. Look around at what other people are using, what other options are out there. It's like just a sort of a plasticky sleeve, and the first couple of times that you put your iPad in and out of this, it's really tight, like really tight. And so, you know, I got to the point where pretty much I was going to get it out one day to show somebody, and I just gave up, said, oh, look, it's too much hassle, it'll get it out. But now it actually slips in and out quite easy. So, iPad by itself, sexy device, nice and thin, a bit heavier than I thought it was going to be. But to get the battery life that it does, I'm happy to, you know, support a bit more weight than expected. So, on a whole, very, very happy with the iPad, and I've gone on way too long. 25 minutes, apparently. So, we should move on. If there's any other questions you do have about the iPad, just let me know and I'll be happy to check them out or answer them. So, what else? Competitors, interesting week. Very interesting week for the iPad. The Curia device, the multi-screen or dual-screen device from Microsoft, they announced they're not going to make that. It was really only in concept stage. They were, I believe, going to make it, and now they've decided they can't. Or don't want to, one of the two. And the HP Slate that we've seen demoed by Steve Ballmer at CES this year, they've announced they're going to delay or not make it at all. I think it's just a delay. But yeah, interesting that's come out after the iPad's launched with pretty good, you know, reviews. So I suspect that, you know, things like they were quoting around 5 hours of battery life. And so really, if you're going to come to the market with a product that doesn't do as much, you know, I don't want to say it doesn't do as much because it runs Windows. And I think if I had a HP Slate and I had full Windows in front of me, I think I could accomplish a lot more in terms of productivity. But if it can't match one-to-one for the battery life, that's a big issue. Anyway, so that's, interesting sort of status. And I think the market would be served well by additional tablets being available. Competition is always healthy. And we're probably not going to see another iPad for another 12 months. So as long as new devices come out within that period, then Apple will respond and, you know, improve the iPad. So my trip was awesome. As I mentioned, I went to a bunch of different cities. I did a bunch of things for the first time. Hot air balloon ride, you know, helicopter ride over the Grand Canyon. Never been in a helicopter before, so that was an awesome experience. What else? Well, Vegas was just crazy. We spent two nights in Vegas, had ridiculous amount to drink and loved it. And the first night we went to this club called XS, and the first thing you walk in is just massive, and then you keep walking through the club and it opens up, and it's actually, you know, there's an outside section, it's got a swimming pool and dancers, and it was just really awesome, you know, something you just we don't have here at home. So it was certainly an experience. The next night we spent most of the night at the top floor of the Palms. Amazing views of the city and the strip. And we actually stayed at Harrah's, which is like right on the strip. If anyone's been before, they'll know Harrah's. Really nice casino and nice rooms and stuff. So that was really good. So basically 10 days of my trip was a Kentucky tour. So I met, there was 50 people on our trip. Met people from all around the world. A lot of Australians, probably 80-85% of them were Australians, but from different places. There was no one else from little old Albury Wodonga. So I had fun explaining where that was multiple times, and just resorted to the typical halfway between Sydney and Melbourne sort of, you know, generic description. Other than that, I said get out Google Maps. Yeah, ended up in San Francisco, and that is a gorgeous city. I love it. It reminded me a lot of Melbourne, but probably cleaner than Melbourne. Very hilly, as you know, as no doubt you've seen movies, etc., etc. But when you know, one example, like really appreciate how hilly was, we're riding in the cable car and they have wooden seats, and because of the incline of the road, you end up sliding down the seats. So, pretty steep. Went to Alcatraz, did all the touristy things, But we were there for about a week. We spent in San Francisco, me and my cousin, and had a great time. Just did different things during the day, during the morning, early afternoon, and then had the afternoon to ourselves. So we grabbed some pizza and drinks, or just go and find different places to have dinner. And I really like that city. And one of the highlights I have to talk about, this is kind of blending into the next story, but one of the highlights was going to see Twit. So being in San Francisco, it's about 90 minutes in a bus to go up to Petaluma, where Twit is recorded. I've been watching Twit for years, and to actually go and see the guys in real life. So when I went, there was Leo, obviously, and John C. Dvorak was there that day, and Tom Merritt has just joined the crew. So it was fantastic to meet those guys in person. And I was actually on Twit. So during the recording, Leo called me in and asked for my comments about the Australian internet filter and different things. And it was just a fantastic opportunity to be on the show, to get the site out, more publicity for TechAU, which is always good. That's episode 244 if you want to check it out. Just go to twit.tv/244 and you'll see a link to my site and the show notes, that sort of thing. And I had a great time. I mean, fantastic. We got some Twitch rag when we left there, like a key ring and a lanyard and stuff like that. Yeah, so we got the lanyard. I haven't really had a use for the lanyard yet, but on my keyring now, there's a little Twit keyring. And the other thing from my trip was I bought a $1 million poker chip from Vegas. So that was kind of cool. But anyway, that's enough about me. I took 4,500 photos on the trip on my Canon 500D. So that's why, basically, just last week I've been sorting through rating, uploading photos to Facebook from my trip. Probably uploaded 600 to 700 photos. It was awesome. I'm really glad I made the decision to get the 32 gig SD card, and it just allowed me to just snap whatever I wanted. And I think I came home with maybe 200 shots on the card to spare. So just really used it to maximum ability. I didn't feel like I needed to stop shooting at any time to save space or anything like that. Just shoot whatever I wanted and then worry about it when I get home. So it was a big task to sort through them. If you're wondering what the workflow is for me, I just use Windows Live Photo Gallery. I might move to Aperture or Lightroom or something at a different stage, but for now I just use Windows Live Photo Gallery, which is free, and go through and rate it. So it's just keyboard shortcut, just 1 through 5. And then when I'm going to upload, I'll just basically go apply a filter and say, show me all the photos rated 3 and above, and I'll just select them all and upload to Facebook. So that seems to work really well. It's a good workflow. Found out Facebook has a limitation of 200 photos per gallery. So I think the only place I ran into that limitation was San Francisco, just because we were there for a longer period of time. Shot more photos there. So anyway, that worked really well. So moving on, we should move on to the next story. And I want to just give a quick heads up about CS5. I'm recording this at the moment in Soundbooth CS5, and we'll be editing in CS5. Just to try it out, to use it. I have done some early tests with Photoshop. One of the amazing demos that I've seen was Photoshop CS5 and their what they call content-aware healing. And so instead of having to, take a section of your image and then paste it over the top, or, do some sort of butchery of the image to try and remove an element, they have this idea that you can basically tell Photoshop the area that you want removed. So say maybe you have a wire running through, like there's a cable through your photo and you want to remove it, for example. You can just basically draw a line using this content-aware healing brush, draw a line over the offending object, it looks at the content around it and then fills in, I guess, what should be there, or if you remove that wire, or if that wire hadn't been there, what would be behind it. So it uses the content around it to do that. And it does an amazing job. Like, it sounds like science fiction. Like, you can literally remove a person from a photo using this tool. Like, it's crazy. So that is an awesome feature of Photoshop. Features for the rest of the CS5 suite. It's going to take me some time to work through all those. One of the more interesting complexities of Flash CS5 is Adobe added the ability to publish iPhone apps from, you know, build your app in Flash. So I am, you know, a Flash developer, and I could build my app in Flash, what I know. Don't have to go out and learn Objective-C. And then simply publish to publish the files required to create an iPhone app. And then so this week or last couple of weeks, Apple came out and changed their developer agreement to say you can only use the basically Xcode, the Apple tools, to create apps. And so this is sort of a dead in the water feature. So CS6 won't have this feature, and I'm yet to try it. So it may or may not work yet, or right now, basically. It may or may not work. I'll try that in the next few days, certainly write a post about it, see what's going on there. But yeah, to add to that, Steve Jobs came out this week in an open letter or blog post that says basically Flash is rubbish and they have no interest in supporting it on their mobile products. So they're still going to support it on the Mac, on the desktop. So it's Snow Leopard. But yeah, in terms of people wanting it on their iPhones and iPads, it's not going to happen. And so hearing that message, Adobe basically said, look, you know, we give up, we've tried, and we can't get it on there. So it's quite a shame, actually, because when you're browsing the web and you hit a page with Flash content in, or hit a page that's entirely built in Flash, you can't view it. That's frustrating, really. I mean, as we go forward, video content will sort itself out with HTML5, but what people seem to be forgetting is there's a lot of Flash content that's not just about delivering video. It's not just a video wrapper. Flash is an entirely sophisticated language. It has a programming language behind it. It can do amazing things. And even just like if you're a photographer, a lot of photography sites, showcases, portfolios, that sort of thing are built in Flash. It's a really easy development tool. So without much time at all, you can actually start building some reasonably high quality products in Flash. Publish them out to desktop apps, to CD-ROM based products, or deliver them online. So it's, yeah, interesting. And then now I'm starting to see articles to say, you know, Microsoft are agreeing with Apple there, you know, they don't want to support Flash RRR. And, you know, some people have been writing incorrectly, I think, that Microsoft won't support Flash in IE9. I think that's not correct. I think they will support Flash in IE9. They'd be crazy not to. There's millions of sites out there that use it. So if they did, for some reason, say we're not going to support Flash, we're only going to support our own product, which is Silverlight, I think there'd be issues there in terms of like legal issues, anti-competitive issues, and there's no reason they can't support third-party plugins. It seems on the Flash on the Mac is, my personal experience has been fine, but you hear a lot of reports about people rubbishing it, that it takes insane amount of processor use and crashes the browser and et cetera, et cetera. Personally, I use Flash, the latest version, all the time. That includes betas, and I've had no issues. I use Chrome browser, so maybe that's a problem. Maybe it's a Flash Safari issue, I'm not sure. But certainly on the PC side, Flash has worked fine for years and years. So I don't really understand where it's coming from. But if, you know, high-profile people like Apple and Microsoft decide not to support it, Adobe have a pretty big issue. Anyways, that's enough about that. CS5... Once I've spent some more time with it, I'll know enough information as to whether I want to upgrade or not. It is, again, the same sort of price, $1,500 to upgrade. So you want to hope you have an old version of CS something laying around, because the full version's $4,000-$4,500, which is crazy expensive. You know, if I'm an individual, and fortunately I can meet the upgrade costs if I need to, but there needs to be good reasons why. And if you're in a business and you're buying, you know, it's not one license, you're buying, say you're a design house or something, or a multimedia house, 10, 15, 20 licenses. I mean, that's big money you're talking about to upgrade. So it'd be interesting to see what the uptake is, if it's rapid or if it's sort of slow. I think a fair few people held off on CS4, so they'd be still back on CS3. Those people, is probably a big enough reason to go up to CS5. For myself, I'm only going to know over time. The Photoshop thing is really, really cool, but can I live without it? Probably. Anyway, couple more quick items. I've been going for 40 minutes already, and this is going to be a big episode. So I want to knock over these couple of stories really quickly. The internet filter. What's the latest on the internet filter? Well, the government has an election this year. Well, Australia has an election this year to elect our government, and so we need to decide if we're going to return Labor or if we're going to put in the coalition. The coalition needs to make up a bunch of seats, and so there's going to be some key election issues that are going to decide the swing voters and how they vote. So the internet filter, you would imagine, is a, certainly for myself and everybody in the tech industry, it's a critical piece of the puzzle. So it should be one of the primary election issues, certainly in my mind. And what we've found out this week is that it's likely to be delayed until after the election. So that's kind of, it's kind of just skipping the issue, if you like. So they'll focus on things like climate change and, you know, any of the other issues out there, economic issues or whatever it be, to sort of take the heat off the internet filter, which is frustrating, and I wish it, you know, wish it wasn't the case. There's not a lot I think we can do about that, other than campaign to the opposition to say, hey, you need to make this an election issue. It's important not only to us and in the tech industry, but to Australians in general. And we want to have a conversation about it. And there really needs to be a place where we can vent our frustration or our concerns and fight for, if you know, if we're against something, then fight for it. So we really can't do that until we hear or see the proposed legislation that's meant to be presented to Parliament, because that's the, you know, as much as we hear loose guidelines about what's going to be included and how it's going to be implemented, the detail, and as you know, the devil's in the detail, will be provided in that draft legislation that's presented to Parliament. So until that happens, it's really hard to have a serious debate about, have a serious shot at stopping the filter. So let's hope that arrives sooner rather than later and encourage the opposition to move forward on that. It's probably a lot more political than I usually get, but it's something I feel pretty strongly about. Iron Man 2. Let's finish up with something a bit more lighthearted and enjoyable. Iron Man 2, the movie, came out this week, and if you liked Iron Man 1, then you're going to love Iron Man 2. I went seeing it on opening night with some friends, and we all walked out of there really happy, really just stoked, and just enjoyed it. When they don't stuff up a sequel, you know, when they make it as good or if not better than the original, that's when you know you're on a good series. So there's definitely going to be an Iron Man 3, and if you haven't seen it already, I'm not going to spoil it for you. Just go and see it. Yeah, it's enjoyable. The other thing in movie news this week is Avatar came out on Blu-ray, and great movie, looks phenomenal. This is the first time I've seen it in 2D. Obviously, in the cinema, most people would have seen it in 3D. One surprising thing about the DVD, or the Blu-ray, is that it doesn't have any special features at all. It's effectively just the movie on the disc, and that's it. Now, I did get it for $20. That was on special. But $20 for a Blu-ray is awesome. So I'm used to paying, you know, $35, $40 for it. So can't complain too much. Great movie. Looks great in 2D as well as 3D. You know, I'd be happy to watch it in either. And Yeah, just want to bring that to your attention. So if you're a big fan of Avatar, you can get it to own at home on DVD or Blu-ray. And go and check out Iron Man 2 in the theatres. And that's going to wrap it up for this week. I know it's been a long one and a good one. So I'm glad to be back and doing it again. It's been probably over a month since I've done an episode. If you have any comments, questions, or just want to have a yarn to me, then send me an email at jason@techau.tv. If you want to hear about the latest happenings in the tech industry or what I'm up to, then you can follow me on Twitter. That's twitter.com/techau. Facebook is facebook.com/techau. Publish some sort of unique content there, sometimes before anywhere else on Facebook, so it's always good to be... you can go and like the page now rather than become a fan, which is a bit of a weird change, but anyway, that's Facebook. And that's going to do it. Just remember to check out the site, subscribe to the RSS feed if you use a feed reader. And you know the address, it's techau.tv. So tell your friends. All right, that's going to do it for today. Thanks very much for joining me once again. Bye.